I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia, at thecommentary.ca. The great political change in Alberta is chronicled and reflected upon in a new collection, Orange Chinook Politics in the New Alberta. It is an eminently readable collection that looks at what's happened and what could happen. From the fall of the Progressive Conservative dynasty in 2015 at the hands of the fourth-place NDP led by the now Premier Rachel Notley, to the forthcoming campaign that features Notley head-to-head with the former MP Jason Kenney, leader of the United Conservative Party. There's lots in the book to discuss. One of the book's editors, Dwayne Bratt, joins me now with Keith Brownsey, Richard Sutherland, and David Terrace. Dr. Bratt has gathered Alberta's top political watchers, and they've compiled a collection that analyzes how the Notley government has done, as well as looks at how Alberta has changed demographically. That's seen a great change in how politicians are viewed. Dwayne Bratt is a professor and chair in the Department of Economics, Justice, and Policy Studies at Mount Royal University in Calgary. He is a frequent commentator on political matters. His Twitter handle is at Dwayne Bratt. This new book is published by University of Calgary Press. I spoke to Dwayne last Friday before an eventful 4 days, where first CBC News has broken a story over Jason Kenney's purported relationship with a fellow candidate in the UCP's leadership race, which Kenney won. Then on Monday, a candidate from the UCP stepped down after controversial comments from the past surfaced. All this before Tuesday's election call. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Dwayne Bratt. Professor Bratt, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So this term, Orange Chinook, who can claim responsibility for that phrase?
That's one of my few contributions to the book, is I came up with the idea. And it's a spin-off of the 2011 federal election, where the NDP made this big breakthrough, and people were referring to it as the Orange Crush, because orange is the NDP color, spin-off of the pop name. I wanted to give that a bit more of an Alberta flavor, hence the term Chinook. But it's taken on a life of its own because Chinooks have all sorts of different meanings and allows for different interpretations that people have. But I think it's a very apt phrase for what we saw.
So this book has a great history about contemporary Alberta politics and insight into how different it is compared to, say, other provinces. Might one glean, say, any patterns as to what happens in Alberta what might happen, say, federally later in the year?
There's a couple things. One is, I think Alberta was distinct in many ways from 1905 when it became a province up to 2015. Mm-hmm. But I think the election of the NDP in 2015 has made Alberta more of a normal, traditional Canadian province. And the reason that I say that is in the first 110 years of Alberta's history, we didn't elect governments, we elected dynasties. Mm-hmm. So the Liberals were elected from 1905 to 1921. They were replaced by the United Farmers of Alberta from 21 to 35. Then the Social Credit Party came in and they governed from 1935 to 1971. And then the Progressive Conservatives came in from 1971 to 2015. So we see successive dynasties. And when a dynasty is replaced, it never comes back again. And the party that replaces it was either a brand new party or a small party. I think going forward, we have now moved into a two-party system with a party on the left, the NDP, and a new party on the right, the United Conservative Party, which was a merger of the conservative parties in Alberta. And I think we're going to start to see more normal type of alterations of politics, where if you lose an election, it doesn't mean your party disappears. It simply means that you've got to refight and you'll be in the wilderness for a while and then come back. So I think that's important to note. As far as the federal election is going on, I think what happened in Alberta is being followed closely in the rest of the country, and it wasn't in 2015. The Alberta election was not a big story nationally until the day after the election and the realization that the NDP was in power. Mm. But in 2019, I think there's a lot of people looking at the election because of things that the Trudeau government did. I would find it difficult to imagine the Trudeau government instituting a federal carbon tax if the Alberta government hadn't already introduced one, for instance. I think there's a lot of people looking at the pipeline debate and what impact that is going to have both on the provincial election and on the federal election. There was a very close relationship for many years between Notley and Trudeau. We saw it on climate strategy. We saw it on Paris, the Paris Accord. Meanwhile, Jason Kenney is targeting Trudeau and targeting very nasty federal-provincial relations if he is elected the new premier. So I think there's going to be a lot of eyes looking to see what happens in 2019 in this province.
You know, I shouldn't ask you about polls, but in terms of us talking right now in mid-March, what does it look like?
It looks like a landslide victory for the UCP. The polls are showing for a sustained period of time, for well over a year and a half, huge double-digit lead for the UCP. And it is quite possible that, polls can be wrong, but this would require a huge error, 15, 20-point error done for a very long period of time. The other point that I would make is if the NDP do just as well as they did in 2015 and they won 40% of the vote in 2015, right. If they get that much support in 2019, they will lose the election. And they will lose the election because there's now one unified Conservative Party, which would likely get 50 to 55% of the vote in that scenario. In 2015, if you combine the Wild Rose total and the Progressive Conservative total, it was about 55%.
Yeah, when we looked at, say, the Alliance and the PC vote in 97, as opposed to what it was in 2000, was that did that come to pass, say, in terms of the number, say, matching?
When you merge parties, 1 + 1 doesn't always equal 2. It tends to equal, 1.8 or 1.75, which has been the experience that we saw with the federal merger between the Canadian Alliance and the Progressive Conservative Party. And so even if they get 1.7, they'll still be in the 50% range, which would be much higher than the NDP.
Now, does that mean that everything in Alberta has gone back to the way it was?
No. We'll have to see. I mean, Jason Kenney is campaigning as if Alberta is in the 1990s. Even their slogan, bring back Alberta's advantage, was a term coined by Ralph Klein. They passed a resolution in their party membership about bringing back the flat tax, which again goes back to the days of Ralph Klein. Jason Kenney, while he has spent an awful lot of time in the last several years traveling around this province in a pickup truck, didn't spend a lot of time in Calgary or Alberta when he was an MP here. He spent most of his time in Ottawa, or for that matter Vancouver and Toronto. He did spend a lot of time in the 1990s where that frame of reference is. But the subtitle of our book is Politics in the New Alberta, and there have been substantive demographic changes in this province that you can't turn the clock back on. One example is the role of rural Alberta. Rural Alberta as a political force has been declining as its population has been declining, and just one useful statistic. In 2001, if you were to combine the seat total of Calgary and Edmonton, it was less than 50% of seats in Alberta. Today, if you include Calgary and Edmonton and the surrounding suburbs, it's two-thirds of the seats in the province. And so that sort of demographic shift it would be tough to roll that back. Another is the role of women in politics. So there's a chapter in the book by Laurie Williams who compares the leadership of Danielle Smith, who was leader of the Wild Rose Party, Alison Redford, who was the leader and later premier of the Progressive Conservative Party, and Rachel Notley, leader and premier of the NDP, and looking at the inroads that they made into a traditional male-dominated field. Rachel Notley had the first gender-equal cabinet in Canadian history. She preceded Trudeau in that respect. Mm-hmm. And part of that is her caucus is roughly 50% men and women. And I think that has already put pressure on the Conservatives. The United Conservative Party, when they merged, the joke was there were more men in the caucus named Richard than there were women. They only had two women elected MLAs out of 30. But if you look at their list of nominated candidates, there are dozens of women. So if we look at the rural-urban split, if you look at the role of women in politics, those are fundamental changes that aren't going to go back no matter who wins in 2019.
And are those two particular kinds of change, they're similar to what's happening in other provinces, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. We're seeing greater urbanization and greater rise of women in politics. I would add another element, and this is Alberta really a conservative province? Jason Kenney is campaigning as if it is. He refers to the NDP as an accidental government. But the concluding chapter in our book by Anthony Sayers and David Stewart looks at post-election. They had done post-election surveys in 2008, 2012, and 2015, and they show that on a range of issues dealing with government intervention in the economy, gay rights, social issues, Albertans aren't particularly conservative. They are similar to Canadians across the rest of the country. And in fact, if you look at the fiscal situation, Albertans aren't even fiscally conservative. We like government spending. We like high government spending. But we want really low taxes. And the only way that the province could afford that was through large oil and gas royalties. And this is demonstrated in a chapter by Ron Kneebone, an economist, showing that Alberta has the highest per capita spending in health care and education and other social services, and has the lowest taxes in the country, and that gap has been filled by royalty revenues. Well, royalties have dropped off the table since 2015, and that has led to successive $10 billion budget deficits. And so whether it's the NDP or the UCP, the foreign government, they're going to have to deal with that because Albertans aren't particularly fiscally conservative. I think the UCP believes that they are, but the evidence doesn't demonstrate that.
Yeah, the book fills in, as I said, the history of what's happened in Alberta in recent years. The idea that it was an accidental government, though, if you look at it, I mean, the NDP was in fourth place going into that 2015 election. To go from fourth to first, how did that happen? I mean, did the polls at the beginning of the campaign suggest that would happen?
No. The polls by the end of the campaign got it right, but not the polls at the beginning of the campaign or a month or two out. And even the NDP didn't believe that it was going to form government in January or February of 2015. They were hoping that they could win 10 seats, that they could double their caucus in Edmonton. They might win a seat in Lethbridge where they had a star candidate. They were hoping that they would finally win a seat in Calgary and recruited a former city councillor to run there. But even the NDP didn't believe that they were going to win the election. What happened were a series of things. One is Jim Prentice, who was the premier at the time, orchestrated this mass floor crossing in December of 2014, where members of the Wild Rose Party, including the leader Daniel Smith, left the Wild Rose, joined the PCs.
Yeah.
This was seen as anti-democratic by many Albertans, that he would basically crush the opposition in the province. And then he calls an early election. The election should have been called in 2016,
yeah.
But he calls it a year early in 2015. And so there was a sense that first you destroy the opposition party and then you kick them while they're down. And so while support was high for the PCs going in, it was very soft. It was, we really don't like them. They're corrupt. They're entitled. They're anti-democratic. But we really don't have a choice. And then over the course of the campaign, Rachel Notley's star started to rise. And they realized, no, we actually have an alternative. And the alternative is Rachel Notley. And the leaders' debate was an absolutely decisive moment in that case. Most leaders' debates don't matter. The media puts a lot of hype in them,
mm-hmm.
you know, both before the debate and post-debate analysis and looking for knockout punches and all of this. But in most elections, debates don't matter. This was the exception that proved the rule. And the exception occurred because Rachel Notley was incredibly poised. She was good. She had a couple good one-liners in there. Jim Prentice looked condescending at one point, looked at her and said, you know, Rachel, math is hard, which just went viral mm-hmm. afterwards. But more importantly, he spent most of the debate targeting Notley. So if you're a viewer and you're really upset with the PCs, but you don't know who to vote for, you don't know who the opposition is, Jim Prentice, by focusing on Rachel Notley, was telling you who the opposition was. And the polls immediately reversed itself after the debate, and that's put Rachel Notley and the NDP on path to victory.
We all complain about debates, thinking they're meaningless and the sort, but other than providing, say, great theater, they really do matter, don't they?
Sometimes they do, and yeah. when they matter, they matter. They matter a lot, and that really changed the election in 2015, and changed the history of Alberta.
Yeah. You alluded to something a moment ago that's covered in one of the chapters in the book, the role of social media, that played obviously a part in 2015. How has that women going into this? Upcoming campaign, I mean, it'll obviously play a big part. Is it any different than, say, how it plays in British Columbia or other provinces, like in Ontario, for example?
What Peter Ryan, who writes on the social media campaign, has said that Alberta has been trailing the federal parties. The federal parties, the federal Liberals, the federal NDP, the federal Conservatives have all been stronger at social media than the provinces, and it's taken a while for Alberta to catch up. Whether it was on Twitter, whether it was Facebook, whether it was Instagram, there was usually a lag. But as the federal parties used it, and then it dropped down to the provincial parties, and he still sees that. And one illustration involves door knocking. All candidates door knock, and they're door knocking for voter identification, but they're still using pen and paper when they're doing their voter identification. Well, the federal parties already have specialized apps that they can input all of that data in, and so that's one of the things that Peter Ryan's looking for in 2019, is just to see the degree of technology that comes up. One thing that is different in 2019 compared to previous elections are political action committees. Mm-hmm. Those have existed in the U.S. Since the 1980s, but they really have started to play a role in Alberta politics when they brought in campaign finance reform. One of the first things that the Notley government did is they banned corporate and union donations to political parties, and then they put limits on how much people could donate to parties and how much parties could spend on election campaign. But they left this large loophole of political action committees wide open. And there were some that were raising $1 million on behalf of the United Conservative Party. And it's taken them a while to try to close that loophole. And so I think that's something that BC needs to look at, because it's still further behind on campaign finance than any other province now that Alberta is in the mix. And if a future BC government does crack down on corporate and union donations, they better be prepared for the rise of political action committees.
You've mentioned a number of the contributors to the book, and I'm curious to know what are the considerations that you and your fellow editors make in terms of what's in a book like this. You're, I think, by and large, all academics, but the book is eminently readable. Did you all seek to put together a book for a popular audience?
It was designed for a popular audience. Mm. It was not designed to be an academic tome that would only be read by professors and students that are left in a university library. And that is reflected both in the writing style, but it's also reflected in the price, which was at $30, which is pretty darn cheap for a university textbook, I can tell you. But when we assembled the contributors, we didn't just want political scientists, so that's why we have economists in the book. We have communication professors in the book, but we also have journalists. And I think one of the most fascinating chapters is the pipeline issue that Deborah Yedlin, who is the business columnist at the Calgary Herald, wrote. Gillian Stewart, who writes for the Toronto Star, is the Alberta correspondent, is in there. James Wilt, who's a recent graduate of Mount Royal and has been a freelance writer, we asked him to look at the role of the city. So we wanted journalists as well to tell the story. We wanted the top political watchers in the province to train their eyes at. And in some cases, we targeted them. We knew what their specialty was, like Yedlin, and we asked her to do pipelines. There were a few people that we contacted that either turned us down or accepted but never delivered. So that's why there's no chapter on campaign finance changes. We did ask someone to do that. It was his specialty, but he never delivered, and it is a gap in the book. But that's how we determined it. We wanted to include lots of different people and lots of different perspectives using different methodologies. And one of the more unusual chapters is the one chapter written by a non-Albertan, and that's Graham White, who's professor emeritus at the University of Toronto, because we wanted the comparison to the Bob Rae government with Rachel Notley, because Bob Rae also won this unexpected government for the NDP in a large province like Ontario, and we wanted to see how Notley versus Rae worked, and it turned out to be a pretty good chapter.
Now, I suppose Justin Trudeau will be a part of the campaign, certainly in the rhetoric of at least one of the leaders. In terms of, say, the success that the Liberal Party had in 2015 in federal ridings, I mean, is that out the window, do you think?
I think so. Trudeau had a remarkable breakthrough in Alberta in 2015. He won seats in Calgary for the first time since 1968. He quadrupled the number of seats that Liberals had in this province. But at the same time, there's 32 federal ridings in Alberta, and the Liberals won four of them. So, you know, you need to put that breakthrough with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
And, in fact, there's people who suggest that Notley's victory help pave the way for some of that breakthrough that Trudeau had. And so Trudeau was quite popular in this province, in parts of it in 2015, 2016. Those days are gone. He has taken a lot of heat over pipelines. Even Rachel Notley, since August, has started to disassociate herself from him. Meanwhile, Jason Kenney has made Trudeau the focal point of the campaign. And, you know, he has promised to, you know, get rid of the carbon tax in Alberta, but also, you know, sue the federal government and get rid of the federal carbon tax. He has promised a referendum on equalization payments. He's even threatened to stop the flow of oil to BC until a pipeline is approved. So he's throwing Trudeau right in the mix. And, in fact, in many cases, he's talking more about Trudeau than he even is Notley.
Yeah.
So you could have a situation where Jason Kenney wins the 2019 election About a month ago, I thought Trudeau was on his way for another majority government, but the SNC-Lavalin scandal, I think, has thrown that into the doubt now. But if Trudeau survives, you're going to have quite the federal-provincial battle between Kenney and Trudeau.
What happens to Rachel Notley and the NDP after all of this? Does the NDP as a force in Albertan politics, does that disappear, say?
You could very well have a result where the NDP lose the election, but have the biggest support that they've ever had in Alberta politics outside of the 2015 election. So if they win, let's say, 20 seats or 25 seats, and they get 30% of the vote, it would be a huge defeat compared to 2015, but compared to every other year of the NDP, it would be a tremendous success. Where I see, so I don't think the NDP is going anywhere. I think they're already thinking that they're going to lose the election, but consolidating themselves for what happens after the election. And so typically when a premier loses an election, they tend to resign. Yeah. I don't know if Rachel Notley is going to do that. It really will depend on how big the defeat is. But the idea that the UCP is then going to govern for the next 40 years and the NDP will dissolve, as has been the traditional pattern of Alberta politics, I don't think that's the case. I think you're going to start to see alterations of power where the Conservatives might win an election or two, and then the NDP will come back and win an election or two, just as we see in Ontario, just as we see in BC and Saskatchewan and other provinces.
And that's not, I mean, that result, say, of the NDP in Alberta getting the same, if not more, in terms of their votes, happened in British Columbia, I guess, in 1975, when the Barrett government was defeated. But their vote total, I think, if it did not only stay the same, I think it did increase a little bit.
And then the NDP get elected again, you know, in the 1990s, and then more recently. So, you know, it wasn't like, you know, Barrett came in, had his one term, gets tossed out of office, and you never hear from the NDP again. Mm-hmm. I think that the same thing is going to happen in Alberta. If the NDP loses this election or loses the next election, they're not going to disappear. They're going to remain a force in Alberta politics. Where I am looking in the future is, do we see some sort of centrist parties emerge? Because right now it's quite polarized in this province between right and left. There are, you know, the Liberal Party, and there's a centrist party called the Alberta Party, and they're trying to gain traction. Yeah, I think it's a bit too early for that. But you look at the situation in BC, where there have been attempts at some sort of middle road, but really it's been a left-right situation in that province for a very long time.
Dwayne, this is such a fascinating book. I could talk to you all day about it. Congratulations to you and your fellow editors on it, and continue. Good luck. I appreciate your time today.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you.
The book is called Orange Chinook Politics in the New Alberta. It is from University of Calgary Press. One of its editors, Dwayne Bratt, joined me on the line from Calgary. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plunta.